Finding Avebury by Penny Thornton. One of the great curiosities about living in a place of historical significance or great beauty or fabulous architecture is that you don't see it. You become inured to it by living cheek by jowl with it. Few of us Londoners have bothered to visit the Tower. Even if we don't see it every day, we know it's there. That's enough for us. We do our sightseeing, our oohing and aahing in other places. And so it is, living in the British Isles, the hub of great stone circles, that most of us have never actually visited one. It took Jessica Adams and Gary Phillipson to drag me off to Avebury one suitably chilly English summer day to jolt me out of my indifference to sacred places. And I hate to admit this, although it proves my observation about living in special places, Avebury is only about 20 miles from my home. In fact, I'm sandwiched between Stonehenge and Avebury, and if I chopped down a hill beyond the back garden, I'd be looking at Glastonbury Tor. Maybe the universe is trying to tell me something. Before I get into my Avebury experience, I want to say a word about landscape, which to me can be mystical and sacred in its own right. Wiltshire and Somerset are two of the most beautiful counties of Britain. I drive up and down to London a lot, on the 303 if you're familiar with the West Country, and every time I do, I pass Stonehenge, which always gives me a moment. But it is the quality of the landscape, the undulating pastures, the stone walls, the pleached hedges, the grand horizons, and the epic skies that never cease to take my breath away. Whether in winter, when the countryside is starkly beautiful, or in the full bloom of summer. In fact, I may even prefer the landscape when it's naked under the frost. So all that being said, when I arrive in Avebury with Jessica and Gary for my first visit, I'm not immediately blown away by the sight. I am blown away by the Force 10 gale, though. However, by the time I'm walking in amidst the stones, the dark and threatening clouds amplify the sense that I'm in a very, very special place. The nearest I can come to describing it is a kind of pregnant stillness. It's almost visceral. Avebury is vast, the largest stone circle in Europe. So vast, in fact, that it is difficult from ground level to trace the outline of the outer circle, which actually encompasses the whole of the village of Avebury, much less to actually see the geometry at work. Many of the stones have been replaced, and some lean dangerously at an angle. But it is obvious those who built Avebury did so for a mighty important purpose. Avebury is believed to have been built around 2700 BC. And before the ravages of time and human endeavour had done their work, boasted some 600 stones, most weighing around 90 tons. Completely lost to us is the central stone known as the obelisk, which is estimated to have been 20 feet tall and so placed that at sunrise on the equinoxes and the solstices, shadows would have fallen across the western and eastern entrances. I would have loved to have been able to walk the Pythagorean triangle and marked out the other patterns that stand testament to the sacred geometry of Avebury. But this can only be achieved with the aid of an aerial map and the use of a compass, which, of course, is one of the most mystifying and remarkable things about Avebury and Stonehenge, that they were constructed without sophisticated measuring devices or hydraulics. The origins of stone circles are shrouded in the mists of prehistory. But if for a moment we set aside the mystical purpose they almost certainly served, we can recognise they acted as places of ritual and communion. The circle has a meaning that transcends time. It both protects and includes and represents continuity and oneness. If nothing else, the stone circle was a meeting place. We also know that stone circles were used as calendars, not just to mark the equinoxes and the solstices, but the moon's nodal 18-year-plus cycle, possibly predating the Babylonians, who from their precise calculations gave us a Saros cycle of eclipses, with which we astrologers are so fascinated. If we take ourselves back thousands of years and stand in the shoes, so to speak, of ancient man, we can understand how the heavens, what went on in the heavens above, was not only an absorbing preoccupation. After all, there was no telly, no Glastonbury festivals, or at least festivals like we know them now, but they were a means of survival. That observation was about survival. Noting the position of a bright light in the night sky and its regular recurrence at the time of, say, lambing or the harvest, provided a sense of comfort, of continuity. The regularity of heavenly events was confirmation that life on earth was progressing as it should. It's not such a large leap from there to see how ancient societies might have wanted to direct the power of those heavenly lights, those heavenly forces. And if you're going to direct or interact with heavenly agencies, you're going to need a means of doing so, a channel from earth to heaven and from heaven back to earth. So the placing of these stones, the height and spacing of these stones, may not only have been a means of observing and acknowledging the solstices and the equinox and providing an essential calendar, but a way of drawing down celestial power. I can't prove that, of course, it's just an idea. We know from the bones of humans and animals that have been discovered under the stones that Avebury, like other stone circles, served as a place of sacrifice. And sacrifice is a means of pleasing the gods and, say, ensuring a good harvest or some other essential for survival. It was a common practice across the ancient world. So I have no trouble whatsoever believing Avebury was a spiritual power centre, a meeting place, not just for people, but for making contact with the celestial realm, the realm of the gods. Walking with Jessica in and around the stones was an education to this earth dweller. "Try this," she suggested, offering me her pendulum, which had been swinging vertiginously from her fingertips. "See if you can pick up the energy. I think we might be on a grid." Sadly, the pendulum only gave a weak little flutter. I did feel a pull, though. Jessica and other sensitives can locate energy lines flowing through the earth, which meet at certain junctures and create powerful vortexes, or vortices. I'm not too sure which is the right pronunciation there. And these vortexes occur the world over and can be seen to be connected. While there may be no scientific proof per se that these vortexes exist or that they mean anything, that thousands of years ago, our ancestors went to an enormous amount of trouble to place these massive stones in positions where such force fields can be detected, and at the same time align in a way that reflects the movements of the sun and moon, it cannot be dismissed as chance, as moonshine. We've either lost a huge amount of knowledge or become desensitized to these subtle forces, maybe a combination of both. The stones themselves are similarly energetic, and looking at them in their silent watchfulness, they certainly have a presence. What great events they may have witnessed, we cannot know. After spending an hour or so within the Avebury Circle, we headed south for the 1.5 mile walk to the West Kennet Long Barrow. The rain held off, although the skies remained threatening, and a stiff headwind slowed our progress. But with Long Barrow in front of us, Silbury Hill soon appeared to our right and remained in our sights for the rest of the walk. It's imposing. Difficult to take your eyes off it. You can no longer climb Silbury, it's not allowed, although it invites you to dare to do so. It's the closest thing to a pyramid I've seen, in Britain that is, covered of course in grass and not limestone, and with a domed top. It compares in height and volume to the smaller of the pyramids at Giza, which were constructed at a similar period of time. And that makes you think too, that the ancient Egyptians, an extraordinarily advanced civilization, built pyramids to such precise specifications, And at the same time, thousands of miles to the west, in Neanderthal Britain, the land of cave dwellers, we were doing the same thing. Maybe pyramids sprang from the collective unconscious because they can be found the world over. But I suspect there's a little bit more to it than that. The Long Barrow, perched on a hill, gazing down on Silbury, Avebury, and the surrounding countryside, looked to me like an earth-covered barge. Long, narrow, and with some 21st century portholes at various intervals so that you can see within or get within. It is considered to be a Neolithic tomb and predates the Avebury Circle and Stonehenge by about 1,000 years. Some say it was built for rich people to look down on their inferiors. Really? That surprises me. Sometimes explanations that satisfy scientists seem laughably inadequate to me. There is an entry point at one end, which takes you about 5 feet into the interior, no more. You can't walk the full length of it. We went in and stumbled about for a bit, trying to get a feel of the place. We took selfies. It smelt terribly musty, kind of unpleasant. But again, that thought that you're walking into a chamber that was built by your ancestors 5,000 years ago is both humbling and awe-inspiring. As we emerged into the light, we found our little group had company. 4 or so teenagers leaping out from behind bushes and making whooping noises. It was, I have to say, a little scary, but somehow entirely fitting. There are no mere coincidences when you make a pilgrimage to a sacred place. Everything is meaningful. And Avebury had been an awakening. The walk back, largely downhill, was like all return journeys, far quicker. And we chose to do what all sightseers do in Blighty, take afternoon tea. And finally, the rain came. We ate our worthy cake, gluten-free, and sipped our tea, builder's tea, to the accompaniment of raindrops rattling against the windows. It might have been preferable to take in Avebury under sunny skies and warm breezes. But on reflection, the weather, like everything else, was perfect. It had been a profound experience on so many levels. I'll never forget it.